Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Happy Friday. It's time for the Three Martini Lunch again with Jim Garrity from National Review. I am Rich McFadden from Radio America in for Greg Corumbus, and we're going to get your Friday Three Martinis on. And as always, we start with the good, go to the bad, and end with the crazy. And boy, wait till you hear the crazy one. It is, I can't even believe it. But the good one here, and this should be fun to watch, is Biden getting ready to take on Team Hillary, because Team Hillary is certainly getting ready for Biden.
Yeah, the Democratic National Committee is meeting in Minneapolis, Minnesota this weekend. And according to Politico, Hillary Clinton's team is getting tired of the Joe Biden talk. And this week, they want to kill it. Their words, not mine. You know, her team strategy heading into the meeting is dismissing the idea that her campaign is off the rails. And now she's doing perfectly sane things like calling Republican presidential candidates terrorists. So don't worry, she's totally not off the rails. And basically saying you don't need to put side bets on the vice president, and to say to Biden himself, there's no role for him here. There's no race to save. I think this is going to be spectacular. I think, there has been this genuine burst of, if not excitement for Joe Biden, a revelation that, look, if they nominate Joe Biden, the whole classified information and email issue goes away. The entire issue of donors to the Clinton Foundation goes away. Her duplicity, her stiffness on the stump. I mean, you know, Hillary Clinton has a whole bunch of problems, you know, Wall Street donations that Joe Biden doesn't have. And yes, he has his own weaknesses, but that's got to be looking pretty appealing to Democrats right now who are starting to feel kind of shaky about 2016.
The first question is Biden mentally prepared? He just lost his son. Emotionally, he has said, this is huge for me, and I'm not sure.
That is a fair and open question. If you believe the Maureen Dowd column, one of the last dying wishes of his son was for his dad to run for president one more time and to do it. That's a story that I think Biden steps in with enormous sympathy because of that. Also, if he decides not to run, I don't think anyone will give him too much grief. I think they'll be pretty understanding of that. I think what's fascinating is, you know, Hillary is seeing history repeat itself, in that she was the front runner. She was the consensus pick. Yeah. Everybody was ready for Hillary. And all of a sudden, it's slipping away from her. And yeah, I think you're going to see some extremely sharp elbows from the Clintons. And that generally does not make her seem warmer or fuzzier or build a consensus. I think you may actually
see the problem.
Yeah. Exactly. There's no nice way to push somebody out of a race.
She's got a likability factor that is a big problem for her. And say what you want about Joe Biden, but people like him. Even the people that don't like him, like him.
Oh, absolutely. It was pretty, I think it's a big part of it. I think it's one of the things, probably his biggest strength in contrast to her, is that she's got just straight up favorability and approval ratings. His are higher. Head to head, he's at least as good as Hillary. And in some polls, he's doing better than Hillary head to head against the Republicans. And I think you put it very well. Robert Gates, the former defense secretary, said that he thought Joe Biden was wrong about every major foreign policy issue that had come down in his career. He also called him impossible not to like. So even the guy's most staunchest, you know, he's got that goofy. We all think he's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But he's likable. Crazy
Uncle Joe.
Yeah, and that's a dangerous thing on the campaign trail.
And Hillary's got to be hating this, because that is what Bill had that she does not have. No matter what you think of Bill Clinton, no matter what you think of Joe Biden, there is something there to like, because they just have big personalities.
Yeah, and you could imagine on a debate him walking away with it. Who do Democrats want as their standard bearer? There's a good chance it'll be him. So.
All right, well, speaking of debates, let's move on to the bad martini for today. It looks like the debate on the Iran deal isn't going very well, and what do we do with this?
Yeah, it's a deeply depressing assessment from Eli Lake and Josh Rogan, probably two of the most plugged-in reporters on the national security beat. They write for Bloomberg. And they assess, look, opponents of the Iran nuclear deal in Congress admit they can no longer kill the accord. Their focus now is making sure there will be a vote on the agreement at all and salvaging some political benefit from their well-funded bid to stop it. Look, the moment Republicans went along with the Corker deal, which basically flipped it from needing a majority to approve it as a treaty, treating it as a separate, and then needing to get the resolution of disapproval. They think they're really going to struggle to get 60 votes, and they needed 67 to override an Obama veto. And then ultimately, you know, this means the deal goes forward. I was just speaking to someone this morning. They said this may be the single most consequential, the Corker deal may be the single most consequential foreign policy mistake the Republicans have made in the past decade. And if you think that this deal is more likely to lead to an Iranian nuclear weapon, which I think is a very reasonable assessment, and if you think that the Iranians, if they have a nuclear weapon, are more than likely, they're not just going to have it sitting there. The possibility that someday they'll use it, which I think is a not unreasonable conclusion, that this vote, ultimately the Corker deal, is where mushroom clouds began. We will trace that as the moment where we had a chance to stop something and we didn't.
Now that the Republicans are basically saying we cannot stop it, do they look past its passing and say, is there anything we can do once it's passed to kind of make it not as effective, to cut off the Iranians somehow, some way?
Okay. I've been tossing around this idea. First of all, what was the great ironies of one of the fights in the Senate is whether to use the nuclear option, right? Whether you should, eliminate the ability of Democrats with less than 50 votes to stop something. Some people may not like the idea of using the term nuclear option about a topic that is literally nuclear. But the idea that, look, there's strong opposition to this deal in Congress. Every Republican opposes it, and a couple of Democrats do. It should not go forward. You've got majorities. You should not make this epic titanic change in U.S. foreign policy with far-reaching dire consequences with only minority support. So I've said, Mark Levin has put this forth. I think it's very clear. Introduce the deal as a treaty. Now, the administration insists that it's not a treaty, and I think Republicans are saying, no, yes, it is, right? You don't make a change this big without a treaty. Treat it as a treaty. Watch it get rejected. And I think that would then create an open question of whether this deal is in effect. Because the president has just said, no, it's in effect because it's a deal. It's not really a treaty. And no, the Senate has officially rejected it. I also then think if that's the case, we can then say, well, you're a company that wants to do deals with Iran. You want to ship them stuff that has been previously been banned under sanctions. Boy, it's not clear that you're legally okay to do that, right? If you do that, you may be prosecuted for violating these sanctions because you're shipping stuff. And the treaty that says you're allowed to do that was rejected by the Senate. I think it sets a great big question. It probably would set up a legal fight sending it to the Supreme Court asking whether the Iran deal is just a resolution or whether it's a full treaty and requires that. No guarantee you'd win at the Supreme Court. But I think, again, if the stakes are high enough, you got to do something like this. And it'd be really kind of fascinating to see how many Democrats. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Can they hold it up long enough for Obama to get out of office? Can they tie this thing up long enough?
A really fair question. I think, unfortunately, we're probably going to see the administration acting like this is a deal. The deal is a deal. It's an agreed to. Congressional support is superfluous. Man. And it's going to be full speed ahead. And I think everybody who wants to trade with Iran, everybody wants to sell them dangerous technology. Everybody who's going to basically ignore what Congress does. The question will be at some point, does what Congress does have the force of law? We're into some very constitutionally shaky waters in this country. But that's my best proposal for trying to torpedo this thing. We'll see how things shake out from here.
All right. Well, speaking of crazy, here's the promised craziest Friday crazy martini that you will ever hear. We're used to nut people like Dennis Rodman going to North Korea, but how about Bill Clinton?
Yeah. So back in 2012, Hillary Clinton is still at the State Department. Bill Clinton is at the Clinton Foundation, and we all know that he was giving tons of speeches for enormous amounts of money. There were two invites that were rejected. One is from the government of the Congo, which has its own human rights abuses, but the one that just jumped out is North Korea. The foreign policy director of the Clinton Foundation writes to Hillary Clinton's chief of staff, Cheryl Mills, and says, is it safe to assume the U.S. government would have concerns about WJC, William Jefferson Clinton, accepting the attached invitation related to North Korea? And I'm just saying, they needed to ask?
Really?
This might be a problem. Let's check. Let's reach out to Foggy Bob just to make sure. Yes, it's a problem. And Mills said, Cheryl Mills has been the villainess in a lot of our assessments of what's going on at the state. Give her a molecule of credit. She said the two-word response, and maybe not the two words you're thinking of, decline it. But then 3 weeks later, they come back and say, the invite came through. Guess who? Hillary Clinton's brother, Tony Rodham. And if you have any familiarity with Tony Rodham, he's constantly been this go-between between the Clintons and shady foreign investments and foreign governments and things like that. So it's almost, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. Oh, wow. I think it was our friend Brendan Bordelon wrote that he's the varnished embodiment of the Clintons' decade-long dance with crony capitalism. So we shouldn't be that stunned that that he's in the middle of it. On the flip side, the fact that people in the Clinton Foundation didn't say, at some point, they said, yeah, we really should do the speech. Let's just check to make sure it's okay with Foggy Bottom. An invitation, could you imagine? We got a really great radio program we'd like you to host in Pyongyang. Would you take that? You know, Jim, we want you to blog in North Korea. No, I don't want their money. Are you kidding? And I'm, you know, neither you or I are anywhere near as wealthy as Rodham and Bill Clinton. Oh. So it just seems like a morally topsy turvy world where this is something you even think about.
Why does North Korea want Bill Clinton to come speak? What were they looking to get out of him?
Well, do you remember a couple of years ago they basically kidnapped. They basically claimed, took two women and accused them full of nonsensical things. And Clinton had to go over there.
Yes.
And you know, the headline, you know, Bill Clinton enters country, returns with two women. but, you know, they wanted a photo op. And there was that photo op and everybody in the Clinton team was told not to smile. Basically, they extorted a photo op in the prestige of a presidential visit. By holding two Americans hostage. So maybe to North Korea, there's a certain value in having him come there and they get to, you know, preen and pose in front of this. Or, you know, God, that's the best scenario. Maybe they had some more sinister purpose of wanting this. But the assumption is propaganda, right? You know, whatever reasons the North Koreans had to bring him there, it wasn't good.
Wow. 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 Can you imagine a picture of Kim Jong-un, Dennis Rodman, and Bill Clinton all hanging out?
Wow. I was going to say, I thought that was pretty bad. But I was going to say, could you imagine somebody like Madeleine Albright, clinking champagne glasses with oh, wait, that happened. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that's the craziest thing I'm going to hear today. So that wraps it up for our 3 Martini Lunch for this Friday. For Radio America, I'm Rich McFadden. And for National Review, that's Jim Garrity. Jim, thanks again. And Greg will be back with you on Monday.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for filling in.